Blog Talk Radio.
Wardell's Love Zone on WDKK Radio on this beautiful, beautiful Saturday afternoon. And I guess it just depends on where you are in the world, and because this is a worldwide internet radio show. So, you know, wherever you are, I hope you guys are enjoying your day. And for us in America, this is a holiday weekend, and we're just going to wish that you guys are safe out there. Have a great time, but please be safe and take care of yourselves. So thanks again for tuning in to WDKK, the Love Zone. And today I have an interesting topic in regards to drummers. So before I even get all into it, I want to bring my good friend in on the line right now. Let me see. Are you there, brother?
Yes, sir, right here.
Rashawn. All right.
Yes, sir,
Rashawn,
right
how
here.
How you doing, man?
Just fine. And yourself,
how are
Bill?
You? I'm sorry. We have a little delay going on somehow here, but I'm sorry. I'll try not to step on your toes. So tell me about yourself, man. Tell everybody what you do, who you are, and all that good stuff.
Okay, well, my name is Roshan Almond. Most of my friends know me by Aaron Almond, which is my first name. I use Roshan, my middle name, on Facebook. I've been drumming most of my life. I'm 54 years old, and I've been playing drums since I was at least about 7 or 8. I've been always beating on things. I love all styles of music. Been playing professionally since I was about 19 or 20 years old. Played with a lot of artists here in Chicago. The Impressions, Otis Clay, Smoke City, Mavis Staples, Coco Taylor, Sugar Blue.
Wow.
This goes on. The Soul Stirrers.
Okay.
Is there anything else?
No. I'm asking you. So, but listen, I wanted to ask you. I mean, it's good to hear that because I kind of know that you know what it takes to what qualifies and makes a drummer a good or great drummer. So I just went online because you know somebody asked me that question, and so. You know, I was like, I don't know it. But that, you know, it just, so I went online to try to find out what other people think, you know. So, and so I'll go through each one of them with you and we could talk about it, okay?
Okay,
so
sure.
The first answer was the ability to feel the correct tempo of the song before it starts. Like, can you relate to that?
Yes. Yes, you know what, Dale? Music, just like a living being, has a pulse. I think every song, or most songs, most music has a pulse to it, a steady, rhythmic kind of flow. And if there's a drummer in the mix, that's the drummer's primary function, is to provide that pulse.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Absolutely, I agree with that. So, do you also? What are your thoughts about? You know, they say the drummers are like the backbone of the band. You know, if you got a really good drummer, your chances of having a really good band is a lot greater. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and I would say to quote the great legendary drummer whom we both are familiar with, Tony Williams. He said that. The bulk of the band is measured by the drummer. That a good drummer makes a good band. Everybody else can be either good or mediocre or what have you, but the drummer sets the barometer for the good band or sets the standard for the good band. Without a good drummer, a band is they can have phenomenal virtuoso musicians on every other instrument, but if the drummer is not up on this game, it's going to really be the judgment of the band.
You know, it's a little confusing, you know, when you talk about, and I'm not really saying for me, but for a lot of people, when you say a good drummer, I mean, a good drummer, you know, there's a drummers that can play a lot of stuff. You know, they get, you know, they got all these, you know, chops, gymnastic chops. I mean, they're all over the place. And then you have the drummers that hardly play anything and just really solid. So are you talking about like the drummer that will maybe split the difference that would be a good drummer?
I would say the drummer that can do the job that's called for on that particular piece or with that particular band, whatever genre or genres of music they're playing, is that drummer the point guard? If you can kind of relate the point guard or the quarterback in that situation,
okay.
which I've told you that you were the point guard and the quarterback in that Solar Sound.
Okay. All right. Okay.
You know,
what
does a point guard do? What does a quarterback do? You know?
Right. Well, you know, that's interesting. I mean, you know, but we'll go on and we'll come back to that. The second one is the ability to keep the tempo extremely constant throughout. The ability to keep the tempo extremely constant throughout. And, you know, a lot of drummers we know had a tendency to go slower or they'll speed up. So I agree with that one because that is it's holding the groove, right? You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with it. But you know what, Dale? I think there may be a thin line between being steady and being machine-like. You know,
okay.
We have a whole generation of listeners that's growing up listening to drum machines. And
right.
That drum machine, it provides a steady, perfect beat, but it's not human. It doesn't breathe. It doesn't have that element of human imperfection, if that
right.
makes sense, which makes the song breathe, which gives it that human aspect to it.
I agree with you 100% because, you know, basically, you know, my thoughts about that, and when you talk about a drum machine, drum machines really are, I don't even know how to say this, but they really are, to me, they need to stay in the room of when you're trying to create a song and you don't have a drummer
yeah.
around.
Right.
I honestly, I mean, there's so many good drummers in this world. There is no reason why you can't find a drummer to go in the studio and play that groove for you. You're putting these machines on here, and then when these guys go out and perform live, they don't sound like the machine. So you're trying to make a human sound like a machine, and now the song
mm-hmm.
don't sound like the record. You know, the song don't
right.
sound like the record. So it's just irritating to me. So I believe that the human beat is our heartbeat. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
that's what makes it human. That's where my tempo comes from. That's where, you know, it's that pulse. It's that human pulse that's a natural pulse. When you compare
yeah.
that with a computer's pulse, it's that the computer has no soul. You know,
that's
there's
right.
no soul, you know, and no feel. It is just doing what it's programmed to do, whereas we are programmed by the Almighty God who gave us
mm-hmm.
the gift. And so
yes.
we play in the feel of or the tempo that feels right. And you know, and I'm a stickler. I'm very hard on myself if I'm not playing in time. But there's
mm-hmm.
like you said, there's a big difference between, you know, playing in time and playing in pocket, you know.
Yeah.
It's those guys can, you know, that computer thing will just become monotonous and it'll drive you crazy.
It
and
will.
And there,
you
won't
know,
be, there won't be any feeling there.
You know, there's various reasons why people do that. And I have an ongoing debate with an old high school buddy of mine. He's a phenomenal musician. I'm permitted to say his name, Tracy Leonard. He's a very, very superb sax player. And he plays to music tracks. He used to have a live band playing with him on his shows, but for economic reasons, he just used tracks, and he practically swears by them, although he concedes that a live band is better, but the economic situation dictates that he use tracks with drum machines and sequence keyboards and all of this. You know, so I guess the do-it-yourself recording, you know, the people, a whole generation that Prince influenced to do everything yourself, they swear by that. But
right.
If you notice, Dale, within the last 15, 20 years, Prince made a complete turnaround and went back to totally live music and musicians.
And that's a very good thing. That is a very good
mm-hmm.
thing. That's
yeah.
a very, you know, I am very passionate about that as well. We have set ourselves up to when I say we, I'm just talking about the industry and especially the R&B. Industry, hip hop, R&B, which you know I'm very close to. I happen to be a black man who happens to love my culture, and when I see us being self destructive by going
yeah.
to the studio and using all these machines to record, we're basically cutting our own people off of employment, and you're giving the machines the employment, you know.
Yeah.
And it is, and we look at these rock groups. You know, these country bands, they use real musicians.
Yeah.
They got they still they've been doing it for years and years and years. And I just don't get how we don't get it. You know, like we go, because when we go to perform, you know, like you said, I went to see some incredible groups that I loved and admired for many years growing up, mm-hmm. and they play to a click track, and that troll totally is killing it, because what they're saying and the whole reason for doing it is to make the band sound better, because now we can have horns and strings, and they can make it sound like more like the record. But they were doing this stuff, and that's where they built their whole audience. That's where they got their whole fan base from back in the day when they didn't have all that crap. They loved them for who they were then. So now why do you got to change? You know, it's like, wait a minute. I love you for who you were. Why are you changing? And that's why a lot of these old school groups can't put out records and sell mm-hmm. them, because nobody wants, because they're trying to be something that they're not. Just do what you did in the beginning, you know?
And so, brought you to the band.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what created mm-hmm. your success. And now all of a sudden you think you can't perform no more unless you follow technology. You were doing it without that technology.
I think, going back to what I said before, I think economics plays a big factor in this. So in the black community, in the black music community, we don't have the access to all the resources that maybe white music genres have. Like, you know, you use country music as an example. They may have more access to resources to use, to be able to afford to use live musicians, and not only coming up with the idea, you know, germinating the idea and then taking it into the studio. A lot of the black people, like over the last 20, 30 years, they didn't have enough money to hire studio musicians to put out their demo.
I agree to a small degree. Let me explain what I'm saying here.
Okay.
What's happening is that we damned ourselves. In other words, the record mm-hmm. industry killed itself. It totally killed mm-hmm. itself by being stingy, by trying to keep mm-hmm. the money for themselves instead of giving mm-hmm. it to the producers to go out and hire, you know, musicians to go in the studio and record. You know,
mm-hmm.
are you there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm here.
So what I'm saying is that when the guys would come and say, hey, here's a song that I wrote and produce, you know, I like to produce on you. They say, oh, love it. You know, and so, you know, just send us, you know, we'll work out a contract and stuff. Well, you know, you don't mm-hmm. really need what, you know, got before, because you got sequences and stuff, right? You can do all that. Mm-hmm. You did all it yourself, right? So you know, the budget is much, much smaller anyway nowadays. And then people start to give into that. Oh, okay.
Wow.
So they say, well, you get to, you know, and it's an all-in deal. So whatever you don't use, you get to keep yourself. So now, now not only is the record company being stingy, now the producer is being stingy too. And he's going to try to keep as much as he can. So he's only going to give you as much as he wants to give you or feel like he can at that point, because he needs to keep some of that money for himself and his family. And so it just keeps, you know, dwindling down in terms of the qualities, in terms of what we're giving to our art. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you guys,
mm-hmm.
they should have said, no, we're not going to sacrifice. I mean, look, the other industries didn't do it. The R&B divisions was getting whatever they were getting, the same thing they were getting before. And instead, the mm-hmm. pop divisions were getting the same thing they were getting before, and the country divisions getting the same thing they were getting before. But all of a sudden, the mm-hmm. hip-hop, you know, and R&B, they got these drum machines and samples, and they starting to copy other people's music, and then putting stuff on top of it. And they go, well, we don't need to spend all that money to record. Well, it totally
mm-hmm.
killed the industry. It totally
you know
killed
what?
The industry. And not only – go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. Oh, you're on the road. Please, keep going.
No, I was just saying, not only did it kill the industry, but it hurt the musicians that were making a living doing that. I mean, and not only,
yeah.
and when you make a living at it and it's selling and it's making money, you really put some time in and you perfected that, and now all of a sudden you're not needed because of a computer. It's
ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Getting back to the original topic of the discussion, the drummer. It start when you take the drummer out of the mix, you're undermining the whole foundation of it.
Absolutely. Because absolutely.
It starts with the drummer. It starts with the drummer. You know, I posted the other day a video. You're familiar with the video with Lee Pearson, the drummer for Spiral Gyra.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
He played the most amazing solo I have ever heard. I'm not just talking about drum solo. I'm talking about solo, period. This was from a drummer, and he was playing totally musically. We don't just beat. We don't just provide a steady beat. We put character, our pulse, our heart, our drive into that. And that is the foundation of all music. That's what made black music so vital. It started with that beat. It started with that beat that came from Diamond of the Ohio Players. That came from you and the Soul Eye sound. It came from Benny Benjamin at Motown. You know, Yogi Horton with we were just discussing Yogi Horton and Jeff Porcaro and Tony Thompson of Sheep. It came from all of those great living drummers providing a living groove that set the foundation for everything. When you take that out, it killed our whole genre of music, like you said.
Yes, it did. Yep. Now, Rashid, I have another caller. Let me get this caller, bring him in so he can – let me see here.
Okay.
Is that you, Troy?
Yes, it is, Wardell. Yes,
oh,
can you hear me?
Hey. Yes,
hey,
okay.
Hey, what's
Troy,
going on, guys?
That's right.
Hello.
Hey, what's going on, Troy?
We're good.
I guess you were listening to what we were talking about. You being a drummer yourself.
Yeah, very interesting conversation you guys are having.
I agree
with, you know, a lot of things that are being said, and rightfully so, you know. And I'm glad to be a part of the conversation.
All right, Troy. Glad to have you.
Okay. So listen, so what I want to do is before we get into a conversation with Troy, I want to play this incredible drummer. And this is what makes you a really great drummer. You don't have to be playing the fastest song in the world or the loudest, you know, a song. You know, you just need to be playing your part. You know, as drummers, we have a responsibility, and we need to be the train. We need to be driving that train and let our passengers, which are the other musicians, make it a comfortable ride for them, so they can do whatever they need to do. But we're the train. We are driving that train one way or another, whether it's going fast or it's going slow. But the bottom line, it needs to be consistent and smooth. And this here brother right here, I want to play your song. And you guys know this song. It's an old school song, but I just want you to listen to the drummer. And we'll be right back. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Times her eyes fall back to tears, Lord, Lord. And when her useful world was about to fall in, each time a slender shoulder felt the weight of all the fears, and a sigh of no one cares still rings in in her ears. Let her cry, for she's a lady. Let her dream, for she is a child. Let her rain, oh God, oh God, she's a free and gentle flower, grow wild. possession, I would declare from the garden to the mine.
Somewhere around. You see, not only that, you see, I'll be your bridge over troubled waters. You see, the reason why I say this, baby, is because I love you, girl. I love you so much, oh, sometimes I can't even explain. You see, you're like a flower that blooms in any season, and that's why I like to say. You're my flower, baby. You're my flower. Oh, baby. A flower. You're my flower. Flower. It's you, baby. You, baby, baby, you, baby, you, baby, yeah, 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 yeah. I love you, baby. You're my flower. You, baby, you, 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 yeah, 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 yeah. I love you, I love you.
Wow.
All right.
Cool. That's cool.
So you guys know who that is? Now, do you know the group is?
New Birth.
Yeah.
All right.
Wildflower.
Wow, that's right.
Take me back to my childhood, man. Yeah,
for sure.
Took me back to childhood, man.
I don't know the drummer, Wardell,
but I know the group.
Okay. Do you know the drummer, Bashi?
No, I don't.
I don't know the drummer. Okay, that's Robert Russell.
Okay, it was about 16 to 17 people in that band, so, you know, you need the scorecard.
Yeah, but,
For sure.
Even though it was 16 or 17 in the band, my focus was on Robin. I was like, Lord.
All right.
So the thing that I wanted to say about Robin is his play was so much dynamics. I just did not understand, like, when I heard the songs, I was like, this is a live, it's got to be live. I know they're not recording in a studio like this. And so when I talked to Robin, I said, man, so y'all did that, was that live stuff? He was like, no, Wardell, man, what we would do is that we go and perform the songs before we went in the studio and played them. So when he played it, he played it like it was live. I was because you don't hear a lot of guys breaking it down,
right?
You know what I'm saying? In the studio, that's like more for a live thing. I mean,
live thing, right?
You know, I mean, mucho chops. So anyway, so what are you guys thinking? Who's one of your favorites? Anybody want to jump in on that one?
Well, if I may. Say, you know, I've always told you my great admiration for you and how you just really and you know what, Dale, first of all, I think I shared this with you also. When I first started studying you, I didn't like you because of the confidence of your play, and it showed through. I could hear the confidence, and it kind of bordered on arrogance. I'm like, who does this dude think he is being so good? You know, I mean, you took control, and I was like, this dude is good. I don't like him. He's too good, you know. But Harvey Mason, he's like one of my early. Tony Williams, Diamond, or the Ohio Players, Freddie White, Jeff Porcaro, Yogi Horton, the list goes, Ed Shaughnessy of the Tonight Show. Bob Rosengarten, Dick Cavett show. He the conductor, the orchestra leader, Bob Rosengarten.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
List goes on and on.
For that. Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. What about you, Troy?
Well, you know, Wardell, I got to say you, of course, because I was around you way back in the day. So I got to say that.
Yeah.
I got to say my boy Jelly Bean. I love him.
I like
John Robinson, Stephen Faraday, Stuart Copeland of the Police. You know,
there's a lot of guys.
Porcaro, you know, there's a lot of guys, but I think I even like Larry Blackmon. You know, I like a lot of his stuff.
Blackmon's really good too.
You know, so But I think you know, if I would have to say. Probably my favorite is probably gonna have to be you because I was around you more than any one of them. I listened to stuff more than any one of them.
Yeah.
So and I'm not just sucking up.
No, I don't think that at all, my friend. You know, but you know, so for me, you know, because there's different categories, right? I have like this, like I have like pocket drummers, and that I love. Mm-hmm. I have progressive jazz drummers that I love. You know, I have people that you know that just this is certain kind of certain styles of drummers that kind of I just love them for what they do, you know. So but for me, Benny Benjamin was, you know, being one of the leaders of the industry, he opened the doors for a lot of us. And he did exactly what you said, Rashad, as far as like leading the show, being the cat. I mean, with that pop, 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 that Motown beat. Oh my goodness gracious!
Yeah.
I mean, those songs were just like drum driven. You know, I mean,
and you know what? A lot of the, You know, Adele, a lot of those early Motown songs, it started off with the Benny Benjamin patented pickup. And you knew as soon as you heard that, it was a Motown song coming on.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, exactly. And that was one thing that Leon Silvers, one of the things that Leon Silvers was trying to share with me, because when I came out here in California in 79 to work with Leon Silvers, he was steady in Motown. I mean, he was, steadying. I mean, you know, and so, and he said, you know, Benny got that pickup, you know, just, you know, because I came out as a progressive jazz drummer, because I was all about Lenny White and, you know, Billy Cunningham, Return to Eden, Tony Williams. And
I've seen the pictures of you dressing like them.
So I love playing all that stuff, but something in me said, you need to try to play some R&B, you know, just go, just see, because, you know, I have friends that would go, man, that's that easy stuff, you don't need, you know, just, you know, stick to this stuff, this is going to make you the best drummer in the world, you know, just playing this fast, progressive stuff, but like I said, there's categories of stuff, you know, because I got to tell you, I never had any idea in the world what pocket was. Until Leon started talking to me about. No, I had no idea. Tony Westcott, who worked with Leon Silvers before me, Westcott lived in Philadelphia, and he was the one that everybody was raving about in Philadelphia. And I, God bless his soul, he passed away now, but you know, but he was a really close friend of mine. And so everyone was raving about him. He lived right behind my dad's gas station. So Tony, I would go over to Tony's house and say, look, you know, I'm a drummer too, and I like to get with you and, you know, and jam. And he's like, yeah, come on, do it. So, but I was into jazz, so I would go over and do my jazz stuff with him, and he would show me the pocket stuff. And I didn't understand it. He was just playing a regular beat. But it was not the fact that he was just playing the beat. It was how he was playing the beat and what he made that beat felt like. The way he made it feel was like, whoa, you know, and so that's what I never could get until I came to California, and then Leon explained it to me, and then I said, wow, this is a whole nother part of playing drums. You know, everything, you don't have to be all over the place. Just hold groove.
Yeah.
You know, Wardell, Charlie Mingus had a quote that said, complicated is easy and simple is hard. And when you think about that, you know, sometimes to have that space, to have that, just to lock it and have that feel, that can be the hardest thing for someone to find out how to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A lot of drummers think that they need to do more. That's why.
Right. You think?
You know what I like about you, Dale? You know that? You know what really caught my ear about you? You laid that pocket down solid, like as if you invented it. As if you invented the pocket, but then every once in a while you'll slip in a little your jazz training in there with a little lick here or there, and it make you tilt your head like, oh, what was that? You know.
Yeah. You know, because what happens is that with that discipline of just holding the pocket, now you could like really like your brain starts like, because you want to, you got this stuff inside you and you want to play, but you don't want to step on everybody else. And you notice that when you're playing this pocket and you got all these different musicians, like the guitar players, not just one, but one or two guitar players, they playing rhythms around what you're playing. Then the bass player, he's moving in there, and you got the keyboard player that's laying on top of it. It's really not a lot of space for you to be all over the place, or you're going to make it sound like a train wreck. So you got to be a little slippery with yours, right? You got to be a little slippery and get it in where you can fit it in. And so for me, that was always the challenge, was to try to get it in where I could fit it in without disrupting the groove, you know? And so so that's what that was about. Go ahead, Troy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, piggybacking on what you said, I mean, that is exactly the way I think it should be, because I know in conversations that I've had with you that you've always said, you know, you got to be the train, but you got to be consistent, but you just can't be all over the place, because everybody has to breathe in the song, you know? Everybody's got to. And, you know, one thing that I looked at, and I'm going to talk about sports for just a second, I looked at the NBA Finals And there's a guy that plays with the Cavaliers. His name is Tristan Thompson. And he was, like, rebounding all over the place. And when they interviewed him, he said something that was very profound. He said, you know what? There's LeBron on the team. There's Kyrie Irving. There's Kevin Love. He says, but the only thing that I have to focus on is just being a star in my role. Just do what you do well and just be the best that you can be in that. You know what I mean? And I think that applies to this instrument, is you just got to be as good and proficient as you can, but then know where you need to be. You got to fit into your space with everyone else, you know. And I saw that. I mean, I saw it firsthand with you, Wardell, because I know when you guys were cutting tracks of Studio Masters from the top to the bottom, one of the things that was an incentive is that you didn't want to mess up because you had to go back and, you know what I mean? So that was way before the day of you know, just being able to do it a different way, like it's done now. But that was very difficult. And the fact that all that stuff was pretty much everybody was playing at the same time in the studio.
Right.
The keyboard
right.
stuff and all that was being done. It was like a live recording at the time. So I think maybe Leon will come back later and put the bass stuff on there. But for the majority of it, it was pretty much the drums and the keyboards and the guitars and stuff that were doing whatever. So, I mean, I saw the fact that, you know, you were very proficient at how you played, but then you were able to fit your stuff in as well. And then the pocket with your kick was just off the charts, man, all the time.
No, thank you. Yeah. I didn't want to make this a show about me, but I did.
Well, you know what?
You know what, Dale? There couldn't be a conversation about drummers or black drummers in particular without you. You're a cornerstone, man. I mean, to say that you just learned about Pac when you came to L.A., that's kind of hard to believe. But, hey, you laid it down. You laid it down. I'm thinking two songs come to mind that you did. I was like, wow, those are masterpieces. One was Somewhere There's a Love by Shalamar.
Oh,
my goodness. It was just like in the, 6-8 time? But you had, like, such a nice jazz feel on that, on the turnaround. You did something on the snare that was totally jazz. I was like, okay, there's some Elvin Jones in there. And the other one was Pain's Got a Hold on Me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You really going.
You was laying.
Down.
Yeah. You were laying down some, like, a little, some fusion licks in that solid pocket. I was like, wow.
Well, I just think I was just having a good time, man. You know, I'm gonna tell you one of the other things too that is really a blessing when you are in a situation with people that you know that you're comfortable with, that really understand what what the goal is. We had a goal, and the goal was to just make this song a hit. Do the whatever we had to do, and everybody would do everything in their power to play their part and not overplay. So it left a lot of space. It left enough space for everybody to have room, to breathe and do what they do what they did best. And, you know, because Ricky Freeze would come in and hit that little stuff with the arp quadrant, man. It was just like, whoa. It's like, now that, where did that come from? And, you know, and the one thing with Leon. I he was just one of those kind of bass players that his bass players were his bass lines were singing. It was so melodic. You know, his bass lines all the way from and the beat goes on. I mean, all those bass lines you listen to and they're moving all over the place. And I'm like, man, they don't have nowadays the bass line is just like doom doom. I'm like, wait.
What's in between, huh?
Yeah, it's like you better find it. And lastly, I want to say that it's really something else when I go to a club, and that's not too often. But when I do decide to go to a club, and they're playing the music, and that music is with all the machine stuff, and it's just, and the beats are broken up so it's just so broken down. That you just don't know where the kick is going to come in, when the snare. It's just all over the place. You know, and the kids out there are having a pretty good time. They're enjoying themselves. But I always find myself walking up to the DJ booth and saying, can you play something old school? Just anything. anything in particular? No, anything. Old school. I just love old school. Can you do that? And, man, once they put the old school on, the dance floor just gets so jammed that they can't stop the old school. They can't stop it.
Because it's live.
That's because it's this natural feel. It's that natural pulse. It's a groove. And people can really feel the groove. Not like wondering where the beat's going to be. You don't even have to think about where the beat's going to be in old school. It's right there. It's got you supported. Now you can dance and do whatever you want to do. All kind of, you know what they do on the dance floor. I mean, so anyway, I want to play another song. By another, we've been talking about this drummer, so I want to play something else. And we got about 14 minutes left in the show. So if you guys want to think of something you want to share when we come back, we'll be waiting for you right after this song.
Okay. You know what I hear in that, Dale and Troy? I hear that what Benjamin was doing in that song, I hear in every great drummer, whether it be you, Dale, or Dennis Chambers, or Jeff Porcaro, or Steve Gadd, or Ed Shaughnessy, or Buddy Rich, I hear that attitude, that confidence, that it has to border on arrogance to carry that groove.
Yeah. That's true.
I mean, I'm not slighting other musicians, but the drummer has to be the most confident in the musical situation. He has to be the most confident in what he's or she's doing. He or she's doing. They have to be the most confident.
Yeah, well, yeah, the drive out there.
If you're tentative, you ain't going to be there. You know what I mean? You ain't going to be. You're not going to be on point with the time, with the pace of the beat or anything. You can't be tentative and do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I tell you, there was many times when we went into the studio and I just had to just say, "I got this." Rather, I didn't think I did or not. I just had to say, "I got this." So. And Leon could tell if you got it, if you had it, or if you didn't. You know, he could feel it. He could say, "Okay, and we'll take a break, and then we're gonna take a break, and then we're gonna come back, and we're gonna nail it." Because we would play it like about maybe 10 times before we actually get the take. You know, then we'd go take a break, and we come back, and bam, it was just magic. You know, and so with that magic is confidence, because everybody's confident now. They played it so many times. we know about it. We don't have to wonder. We know about it now. All you have to do is perfect it. You know what I'm saying? And so, that's the fun part, man. It's just, and I miss that camaraderie of being in the studio with those guys and just being able to do that. And I'm quite sure there are a lot of musicians that miss that. You know, and I just pray. I pray someday we get that back again.
You know, in Chicago, on the live local music scene, there's still that camaraderie among musicians. And there are just numerous. I mean, Chicago is busting with local musician talent on the local circuit. And sometimes there's not enough gigs to go around. And it's an economic thing again, Dale, whereas most of the units that's being hired to play in clubs are like 3 or 4-piece units. Bass, drums, maybe 1 or 2 keyboards, and guitars are almost non-existent nowadays. And unless the horn player is the band leader, horns are excluded, which is a shame. You know,
it's even like that in the big – In the big concert world, where they'll have one band playing for 3 groups.
That is
terrible. It's just so sad. It's like, you know, you guys should be making more money, not less money. What's the deal? I don't get it. You know. So, but anyway, guys. So we got about 5 more minutes to go. I just want to. Because, you know, Rashad had mentioned that he can't believe that that I didn't get, you know, the pocket thing until I got here. I actually have this song that I recorded. This song, I said, that's it right there. I had already recorded And the Beat Goes On, Second Time Around, did all these other things, right? But when I recorded this song, I knew exactly what Leon was talking about, and it chokes me up a little bit, because it was a true moment. It was like, because I didn't know. I was like, okay, just on time. It's pocket, but pocket is not just being on time. Pocket is a feeling.
Yeah,
and you gotta have that emotion in everything you're playing with that groove. You gotta be married to that beat. It's like,
you know what, Bill?
I'm sharing it with you.
Yeah. If I can interject just quickly, I know your time is limited, but I always tell myself and I tell my students, you have to be able to dance to what you're playing with, because if you can't make yourself dance while you're playing, how can you expect other people to move?
Amen.
And I see you when you play. You had this little like dance movement. I'm like, how is he doing that? I have a different dance movement than you, but. To make yourself move first is important.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I just want to say thanks to the both of you guys, Rashad and Troy. I really appreciate you guys so much, and I hope you guys have a great and safe holiday weekend. And And to all the listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in. And, you know, for the ones that may have just tuned in, you can always go to the archives and just hit the play button again and play it again and listen to these guys and what their thoughts are. But as drummers, it's so important that you take your gig serious, but also have a lot of respect for all the other musicians and singers that are on that stage with you. and make it, you know, make it like one big beautiful party and not just about you, but make it about
right.
everybody. End of the day, the whole band wins. And that's what we want.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Right.
All right, guys.
Right.
So Rashi, here's the song.
Okay.
Rashad.
Okay.
Here's the song. All right, Troy. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
God bless everybody. All right.
Okay. God bless you, Wardell.
Hey, Troy.
All right.
All right.
Check it
take
out.
Care, Rashad.
Check out.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That was rock solid.
Right.
Yeah,
well, we get 20 seconds left. What you got? What's on your mind? Anybody?
I'm in the drum room. What? Shit.
That's a good place to
That's
be.
That's what I'm doing
friend.
Right now.
That's a
when
good
can we do this again?
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When can,
hey,
this
can we do
this again?
We could do this once a month. How about that?
All right.
Okay.
Works for me.
Let us know. Let us know. Rashawn, nice meeting you,
first,
man.
Same here, Troy.
First Saturday every month, we'll get different drummers on as well. God bless you guys.
Okay.
Okay.
God bless.
All right. Bye.
All right.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.